Personal Growth. This is voice and the host of Inside Personal Growth. And I want to thank all of our listeners who return again and again and again to our podcast series to speak with us and listen to the words of wisdom from our authors. And interestingly, today on the line, I have Ann Steiner joining us from the Seattle office of the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. And Ann was referred to me by a very good friend who writes some articles for The Examiner. His name is Steve Seiden. And I was intrigued by what the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation was doing. I hadn't had any experience with it at all. They also have a book called Your Natural Gifts that we will actually post up a link to the website to. Good morning to you, Ann. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate having you on the program this morning, and I want to let our listeners know a little bit about you and a little bit about the foundation. Ann is the director of the Seattle office of the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation, and I might add they have many offices across the United States. You can actually, for my listeners, look them up at www.jocrf.org, the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation, Inc. The foundation is a nonprofit science and research organization dedicated to the study of aptitude measurement and human development. There are aptitude testing centers in 11 major cities across the United States. Since 1922, the aptitude testing program has helped thousands of students and adults make wise educational and career decisions. After graduating cum laude from Williams College, and worked like many recent graduates, and she was kind of wondering what she was going to do. Not knowing what else to do, she signed up at the temporary agency and later worked a series of unfulfilling jobs. Then Johnson O'Connor Aptitude Testing Program provided direction and a purpose. Armed with a specific knowledge of her inner talent, she was able to understand exactly what it was that made all of her previous jobs so frustrating and what it was going to look like in the future. Ann started working for the foundation in 1998 as a test administrator, and she is now in the role of the director of the Seattle office. And it's really a pleasure, and I want to thank you because you actually allowed me to go through the aptitude testing up in Los Angeles, which was the closest office that you had to San Diego, which is where I reside. And it was really quite an interesting experience. And I want to ask you this. You know, there's lots of people in today's world that are shifting jobs. You know, they're out there. There's the job market. The unemployment rate is pretty high right now. People are looking for more meaningful work, especially young people. We find baby boomers, and I'm going to ask you a few questions about the segments of the population, are seeking more meaningful work. What would this aptitude test and how would this aptitude test help somebody who's really on that search today, who might be out there today going, hey, you know, the career I've had, I'm unhappy with, I would like to make a better decision. How might this program assist them?
Well, we think that aptitudes are, you know, natural abilities, things that naturally come easily to you. And when you know what your natural abilities are, then you're able to make better choices about what to major in, what career to choose, whether to take this job or this job. And we find that it's what you do have that's most important, that if you score high in something, it's something that you should use. It's something that's a part of who you are. And if you're in a job that doesn't allow you to use that aptitude or express that aptitude, then it can lead to feelings that something's missing, that something is, something you need to be doing something else. And so when you go through this kind of program where you find out what your abilities are, then you can look at the different choices that are in front of you and say, should I do this or should I do this? And it makes sense to choose one over the other if you have something to go on to choose.
Well, now there's a lot of young people that I know take this that are in college or they're in high school. And how, for a student who's out there, for a parent who's listening for their students, they're going to benefit at such a younger age. You know, you've got some people that are shifting jobs, have been in 2 and 3 careers that might be taking the aptitude test. But really, this program is an excellent source and resource for younger students who are just now coming out of high school or entering into college, correct?
Yes, that's right. And we test a lot of students. We test age 14 and up. We test students in high school and in college. And the idea is that, you know, a lot of times you're not given a lot of guidance in school about what to major in. And this can be a very helpful program for saying, okay, I really liked my chemistry class or I really liked my history class, but what does that really mean? Does that mean that I should be a historian, or does that mean that I just like to write? You know, so there's a lot of things that can go into what makes a class enjoyable. And when you think about what your actual abilities are that you're able to use, then you can make better decisions about what to major in. And also, it's just what kind of school to go to. One thing that we look at is how you score on our Graphoria test, and it is a test of just of clerical speed, simple as that. And it can be a very crucial aptitude for school, just because a lot of schoolwork is on paper. Sometimes we have students come in where it's a revelation to them to find out that if they score low on this test, but why school has been a struggle. And so sometimes if you know this score, if you know that you score low in this, then you can pinpoint a better school for you to say, okay, something smaller, where there's less paperwork, where there's more individual attention. That can be a helpful thing to know as well as, you know, what kinds of programs to look for, what kinds of majors should I be looking at.
Yeah, and I know I took the test, and on the Graphoria part, I scored low, and I would not make a good administrative assistant, as they say, because I'm not good at the paperwork side of things. But I am really good at writing, and I'm very good at interviewing. So it did say that I should have been a journalist. I guess I'm pretty close. How's that?
Isn't that wonderful?
It came up as a teacher and journalist, so I guess I'm doing both, actually. Now, you know, give our listeners an idea of, you know, this is a relatively long test. I mean, I went to Los Angeles under 2 different occasions, but it normally would have been 3 different occasions to actually take the aptitude testing. And So I want our listeners to get an idea of the length of the test, the thoroughness of the test, and really the process that they're going to go through, that they'll experience.
Yes, the testing is very comprehensive, and it does take a while to go through it. We split the testing into 2 separate sessions, and there are 3.5 hours each. And then you have a final meeting where we go over the results and break it down for you. So, and the other thing that's important to realize, too, is that these are performance-based tests. They're experiential. And we're not asking you what you think you might be good at by just asking you, like, do you think you'd like to work with people? And having you check a box, yes or no. No, we actually give a test that actually measures these abilities. So, for instance, one of our tests of spatial ability is giving you a block that's been cut up into wavy pieces, and you have to assemble it as quickly as you can.
Definitely, I know. I did. It was a tough one for me.
Yeah, a lot of people remember the wiggly blocks. It's a very memorable test.
Yeah, and so that's one of the things. And then there's lots of tests associated with words and filling, you know, a correlation with words. You're moving pens and the little needle nose pliers and moving them over. I mean, there's lots of very unusual aspects to this test. And so in the end, what is it that overall you would like to tell somebody? I mean, I know there's different aspects of aptitude that you're trying to get at. But in the end, what is the examiner or the person that's doing this saying, okay, now I've run these people through these battery of tests. Each of these tests indicates a certain aptitude that I would have as either a writer or an engineer or somebody who could become a teacher or whatever they are. And then there's a thing that he handed me at the end called the SDR.
SDS, yes.
SDS, I'm sorry, the SDS.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So explain to our listeners, you know, really how accurate it is in kind of pinpointing that aptitude.
So what you do when you're all done is you sit down with somebody, and we think it's the pattern of scores that's most important. So it's what you score low on, it's what you score high on, it's how they all go together. And then we're trying to teach you about yourself, that these are things that naturally come easily to you. And aptitude is different from skill. So you can gain skill in any area. You know, for you, Greg, like, it's not that you couldn't be an administrative assistant. You would be able to do it if you practiced and you were, gained those skills. But you probably wouldn't be very happy doing that. And that's the whole idea, is like, where would you be happiest? And when we look at your overall pattern of scores, we might say for you, for example, you know, if you score high in the aptitude for communication, which is useful in teaching, it's useful in writing. I'll give you an example of a woman who came in who scored with a teaching pattern, who actually up until that point had been a nurse. And what she was able to do, which I thought was really wonderful, was instead of going back to school, getting a teaching degree, becoming a high school teacher, she actually switched over into teaching childbirth classes. So she was still in her field. She was using her nursing background, but she was using her aptitude pattern in a much more satisfying way to her because she was able to talk and communicate with people.
Well, that's a perfect example of how people can kind of redirect their natural talents within the field they're already in and maybe actually shift in like she was a nurse, but teaching these childbirthing classes was kind of a natural for her. And I think that is what this aptitude test will do for people. It's not so much just the severe shift, but maybe some minor shifts, right? Just like what she did.
Yes, and I think that is kind of a key thing to realize when you go in to take these tests, is that sometimes you can just shift over to a different position within your own field, and you can end up being a lot happier without having to go back to school or make a big change. And that's possible too. I mean, you can make a big change based on your abilities if you want to, because people change careers midlife a lot. But sometimes it's possible just to make a minor shift. I had another example I can give you along that line. A man who actually worked as an engineer, and he scored as an engineer, but he also scored as a manager. He scored high in being able to work with other people, coordinate the work of other people. And what he was doing as an engineer was very solitary. And so even though he had a good pattern for engineering, he needed to incorporate work with other people in order to be more satisfied. And so he actually became a lead engineer. He coordinated a group and he organized projects in addition to doing the engineering work and using those aptitudes as well.
Yeah, that's a great example. Now, one of the things that you measure for, and I'd never heard the word in my life, and I scored very high on this, was Ideaphoria, how do you say it?
Ideaphoria.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. You guys coined that term. So explain to our listeners, just this is, I know this is more specific to something that I did, but it was a measurement that really was extremely high for me, and it came to assist the examiner in telling me exactly where I might fit. So I think for some of the people, I notice I'm looking at something that says advertising, PR, psychology, nursing, editing. Are those the kind of areas where if you scored high, you would want to, you know, kind of gravitate toward?
Yeah, there's always different ways of using the same aptitude. And Ideaphoria is a test where we ask you to just write off the top of your head on a speculative question that we give you, just write as much as you can. And people who score high just tend to have a natural ability to generate ideas, to generate a lot of different things to say about something. And when you have this, it's kind of how your mind works, that you're able to, you just have this faucet that's always on, you're always generating ideas. And then you want to have a job where you're able to use ideas, where that's what they're asking you to do, is come up with a lot of ideas. And so we see things like teaching, interviewing, you know, like you do, writing, marketing, advertising, you know, can be all ways of using that ability.
So your creative skills, a flow of creative energies that are and talents that are put in that area that you can naturally express to the world in some way. Now, do students that go through this or adults that go through this, doesn't really matter, do you notice, you've administered many of these, is there an epiphany for people, or is it just more of a stronger sense that they get they're kind of reconfirmed about the intuition they had about who they were?
That's a good question. Sometimes there is an epiphany. There is a feeling of, oh, I never knew that before, but now that I've heard it, it makes perfect sense. I'll give you an example that of a woman who she actually was tested about 20 years ago, but she came in recently with her niece, who she was bringing in for testing, and she tested it in her 40s. Her husband had just passed away. She had young kids. She had never really worked, and she didn't have a college degree. She came in for the testing, and she was somebody who ended up scoring high on a lot of different things, and that happens sometimes. And one of the things that her pattern was good for was scientific research. And so, armed with this knowledge, she started taking classes here and there. Her husband's family was helping her out, and she took a biology class. She took a chemistry class, and she kept taking more classes. And she ended up falling in love with cellular biology, got her bachelor's, got a PhD, and became a scientific researcher and a college professor after not having worked up until the time that she was in her 40s. And she said that it was this revelation when she came across science, when she was taking those first science classes, and she said, this is something I never knew about myself. This is a whole part of myself that I had no idea existed. And so it was a really exciting thing for her.
Well, that's really that, and that is, because that's kind of an epiphany, you know, to have something like that occur. Now, we've interviewed several times Dr. Daniel Amen, and he has a series out called Change Your Brain, Change Your Body. And I've noticed here comparisons that some brain scans about spatial and numerical scanning results. Can you speak to some of the results that your organization has found as a result of looking at this? I noticed there's a recent article actually in the, well, it's an older one, but it says relationship between aptitudes and brain areas. What did the Johnson O'Connor Research Institute actually find?
Well, that's the section of our company that does the research. One thing that we do, in addition to the 11 testing centers, is we have our research department, and so we're always doing research on aptitudes, careers, and in this case, you know, aptitudes and brain scans. You know, when people are doing something that on our tests we associate with a certain ability, like spatial ability or numerical ability, what areas of the brain are lighting up? I'm not as familiar, because I'm not in the research department, with the details of the study, but it's a very exciting thing that we've just started to do recently.
So they're measuring, it looks like, with spatial awareness and numerical awareness, because there's such a big movement awry as to the neural pathways being reprogrammed. We speak to many people on this program about how people are saying, well, I know for me, are you more left brain or are you more right brained? what can the neural pathways be reprogrammed? And yes, they can. And the interesting thing is it would allow you to shift even a vocation or maybe be inclined to go in a different way. And it's really quite fascinating. It's fascinating research. So
It's a very fascinating area, how the brain works and what you can do to develop your brain. Our idea is that, you know, if you have a certain propensity for being able to do something well, that it makes sense to develop those abilities, develop the skills that go along with those abilities so that you're reinforcing what you're already suited for.
Right, strengthen. Now, this started way back in the 20s, and Mr. Johnson worked for GE, and that's where these tests actually started. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the history of how this got started and why it's still, obviously, still going today because there's a huge need?
Yeah, Johnson O'Connor worked for General Electric, and he started developing these tests to help identify the right people for the right job at GE. And some of the first tests that he developed were those pin tests that you did, where it was fine motor dexterity, because they were looking for people to be quick on the assembly line. And so he had this pool of people that he was testing repeatedly and noticed that if somebody was faster on the pin test the very first time giving it, then they tended to always be faster. Everybody got better because they were all taking the test again and again, and there was practice, and everybody improved. But the people who were fastest always tended to be the fastest. And so this was the idea that you could actually measure these things once with one test and then make predictions about how somebody would do in the future in a work situation. So then he developed more and more of these tests, and these GE employees started asking him to test their family and friends so that, you know, to help them identify what jobs they should go into. And so gradually the focus shifted from finding the right person for the job to helping each person find their perfect job. And then he was associated with MIT and the Illinois Institute of Technology for a while, and before becoming the nonprofit company we are today, which happened in the 40s.
And interestingly, you're a nonprofit, yet for our listeners out there that are interested in taking this aptitude test or sending their children through this aptitude test or young college professionals through this test, there is a fee, right? I mean, you do charge to take the test. It is quite extensive. So you can tell them a little bit about the costs associated with it and the various tests. There is more than one, I would presume.
The testing does cost money. It's $675 to go through the whole program, and that does include everything. And there's 28 tests, and it's very comprehensive, as I said earlier. And everybody who comes in actually takes the same tests because we find that experience doesn't necessarily help you. You know, so the same person, an adult, can take the same tests that a 17-year-old can take, because we think that aptitudes are stable over time. And so it's just the one program that we have, and people come in, and they do pay the fee, and they go through the test. And the one nice thing, though, is that you don't have to get it done again. Because aptitudes are stable over time, you get them measured once, and you can keep using the information the rest of your life, and people do.
So these are tests that they only have to do once, even though it is maybe a little bit costly. It is something they only have to do once. And is this test more just for them, or is this something that they potentially would want to provide to an employer at some point, or is it just strictly something that they're going to keep?
I think some people do use them in interviews and or share them with their employer. We have some employers who send their employees in for testing and, you know, sponsor them for the testing. And I've had people tell me that they actually would write their college essay about the experience of going through the tests and what they learned from it. But, you know, it is mostly for your information. It's something that you can look at and say, okay, I know I'll always score high in this aptitude. I'll always have these abilities. And so you can just keep using it as a touchstone every time you have a decision to make that relates to work.
So now, if somebody wanted to take one of these tests, how would they learn more about it? I mean, is there 11 centers across the United States?
That's right.
And so they're in major metropolitan areas, but what's the website? And if they wanted to download something like download a PDF or something like that about that, where would they go to get that?
Well, they can go to our website. It's www.jocrf.org. And there's a lot of good information there about the testing program, about where our 11 offices are. And you can also call any of the offices that are listed there or send an email, and somebody will be happy to tell you more about the program. And there is a PDF you can download of the just a kind of an information packet that's on the website, and they can look at that as well.
Okay. And any videos out there anywhere about people explaining this, like YouTube or anywhere like that?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's mostly what's on the website.
Okay. So on your website. What's interesting, I noticed that actually in the Los Angeles Testing Center, I don't know about Seattle, but I was pleasantly surprised to see how much of it was actually handled by the administrator, where you were doing these tests in front of somebody, and then probably 50% of it was on the computer as well. So it's a good cross segment of, you know, taking an instruction off the computer as well as sitting and or standing in front of someone and doing certain series of tests, especially the ones with the pens and putting the blocks together, objects, correlating objects in books, numbers that you did in front of people. So it was really quite interesting. I was amazed at the the amount of testing that actually goes on.
Yeah, we have tried to stay away from the paper and pencil aspect of a lot of standardized tests, and that's partly because of what I was talking about before, that some people just don't have that paper and pencil aptitude. And it's also more fun to go through the tests when they're hands-on and experiential. And so, like you said, about half of them are given with a test administrator right there with you, asking you to do this and timing you or asking you to solve a particular kind of problem. And then the other half are given on the computer, where you're listening to instructions, listening to musical tones, or memorizing a string of numbers. And there's a lot of different things that you do.
Yeah, don't talk to me about memorizing that string of numbers. That was that one is pretty tough. For all of you who decide to take this test, I'll tell you, they flash some numbers up on a screen in a sequence, about 9 of them, and they give you about a second and a half to look at them, and you're supposed to remember the numbers. I don't think I could remember 3 of the numbers. So that just shows you I probably wouldn't make a good engineer, that's for certain. But I do want to thank you, Anne, for being on with us today. And for our listeners, there is a book that Johnson O'Connor Research does have called Your Natural Gifts, How to Recognize and Develop Them for Success and Fulfillment. And it's by Margaret E. Broadley and associated with the foundation. We'll put some information up about that as well, and we'll put information on a hypertext link to the website for all of our listeners. And Anne, it's been a pleasure having you on. I know that this is something that, you know, really for those who can afford it or afford to send their children and or young college students to it, I would highly recommend this. I actually went through the test, as I explained. I found it fascinating, the results. I had a very good administrator. I had an excellent experience in the Los Angeles office. And I want to thank you for offering that to me as a journalist to actually sit down and do the test so that I could understand a little bit more about what Johnson O'Connor does. And truly appreciate what you guys are doing, and hope that, you know, our listeners will at least drop into your website and inquire. What's your email address if they wanted to reach out to you and write you an email and or call the Seattle office?
My number here is 206-623-4070. And feel free to call me here at the office. You can also send me an email, and it's just my last name, Steiner, S-T-E-I-N-E-R, at jocrf.org.
Great. And for all our listeners, go to www.jocrf.org to get more information about the aptitude testing. And Anne, it's a pleasure having you on with us today. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.